Welcome to The Science of Parenting, a radio show dedicated to sharing scientific information with parents. Now here's your host, Dr. Douglas Gentile.
Today we're going to be talking about natural disasters. No, not this show, but we're going to be talking about what happens when there are natural disasters and how do you talk to kids about it. Joining me is, of course, our own in-house natural disaster, Mike Murray.
So this will not cover things I do in the kitchen. Just that doesn't count as a natural disaster.
That's an unnatural disaster. Today we are joined by Teresa Zilk and Abby Lamont, who work for Project Recovery Iowa, and they are joining us here in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So when we talk about natural disasters, what are we talking about?
We're talking about, mainly for Iowa, we're talking about floods and tornadoes, which, as you know, have been very prominent in the news lately.
Mm-hmm. And is there a real difference between different types of disasters, how you should talk to kids about them or how kids understand them?
I think there is no real difference, just a general understanding of letting them know that as adults, as their parent, their caregiver, we're here to keep them safe and to provide a safe environment.
Mm-hmm. So let's start with, what does Project Recovery Iowa do?
Project Recovery Iowa is a federally funded grant that offers a mental health program that's managed by the Department of Human Services. And we can assist Iowans who are struggling to remain resilient and in the face of a disaster and are recovering from either a flood or a tornado. Mm-hmm. We offer individual or group counseling, and it's free and it's confidential.
So, Abby, you in particular are your title is crisis counselor.
I am, yes.
So it's good we have her here in the studio because I'm sure there's a crisis coming. We've only just started, but there must be one coming. I'm looking at Mike and it's
she
brewing.
Can handle it. Whatever it is, she can handle it.
I've taken some precautions before coming, so it's okay. We might be okay.
So what actually do you do in your job as a crisis counselor?
Yeah, well, actually, my job is a plethora of activities that I get to go. A plethora. I can do anything from do a group counseling, whether it be in a school, a daycare, a church, to I go out and I go door knocking and I go door to door to see if people had flood damage or are, you know, struggling to remain resilient throughout the community due to a disaster. So I've been door knocking in negative 13 degree weather, or I have been in a church and had someone that I didn't think was affected by the disaster come in and say, yep, I was affected. And so we've had some of the best results that way, as people that you never would have thought were affected come in and do that. So
Now you work specifically in Jasper and Marion counties?
Yes. But we actually have teams throughout the state. Any county that was declared a presidential disaster.
We actually are in seven counties. We're in seven. So Jasper,
Marion, Polk, Warren, Wapello, Astoria, and Hamilton counties. Mm-hmm. And so if you're in any of those counties and are having problems from a disaster, we actually have an 800 number that you can call and tell them you are from that county and your team can come out.
Mm-hmm. It's actually the Iowa Concern hotline that they would be calling.
And that number is 1-800-447-1985. And
that number. Now, what if you're not in one of those counties? Can people still get help?
They can still call that number, and they can get someone. Someone is available 24 hours, 7 days a week. You will not be able to get a crisis counselor to come to your door, but you will be able to speak to someone over the phone who can direct you to resources in your area.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that is not really a surprise to parents, but I think they need some help with, is trying to figure out just how to talk to their kids about these things. And there are a lot of different opinions about that.
Sure.
And a lot of different family values that sometimes go along with it. But one of the things that we do know from research is that different kids of different ages are scared by different types of things.
Sure.
They worry about different types of things.
Sure,
they
absolutely
have a totally different understanding of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we work with kids of different ages?
Well, actually, you can. If parents, the first thing they can do is remain calm and definitely try to alleviate the fear in your kids and normalizing their reactions to the disaster. Their reactions are normal to an abnormal circumstance. So trying to do that with no matter what age they are, doing that will definitely help the situation first. And then just listening, being a good listener to your kids and listening to their feelings and letting them talk on numerous occasions and listening to them will definitely help your child, and providing a safe environment for them to do that, that it's okay to talk, it's okay to feel this way, it's okay the reactions that you're having. So no matter what age they are, in doing that will definitely help alleviate that fear. The parents definitely shouldn't give out more details than necessary.
And it's mostly for younger children, yep. Especially younger children.
And so if your child's 5 and they see the tsunami on the news, definitely trying to help minimize their exposure to that will help them alleviate that fear. But now if they're 13, 14, 15, obviously they're going to understand, have more of an understanding. So, mm-hmm.
But let's talk about that. You know, what are the different stages that for parents, you know, with kids in different ages, say for starting with, you know, toddlers and preschoolers, they have a much more limited understanding of the world. Mm-hmm. They have a hard time differentiating between fantasy and reality,
exactly.
Sometimes. And, you know, they tend to be more scared of how things look, mm-hmm. than really having a deep cognitive understanding of what's
right.
going on. So how do you talk to that type of child about it? How do you help them?
I would say one of the first things that you would need to do is turn off that TV. Or limit their exposure to whatever the graphic image is on the TV. Because like you said, they tend to think that things are real. So let's say there is a flood, or the flood has occurred, and, you know, over and over again, we keep seeing the same news clips. The child will begin to think, of course, that, hey, this is happening again and again and again. So they're repeatedly being exposed, and the anxiety level is increasing. So one of the things that a parent can do is maybe ask them about what they've seen and how they feel about it. Some things that I know other parents have done is they've actually engaged the child in an art project and have them draw out their feelings as a way to kind of get at what's going on in the child's head. And that's really a good way to work with younger kids. And the other thing that parents can do is really stay close to them, give them lots and lots of FaceTime, lots of hugs, you know, lots of reassurance, and just let them know, you know, we've seen a bad thing or we've experienced a bad thing, but we're resilient, we can get through this.
So I was doing the right thing by turning off the TV of the tsunamis, not being lazy because I didn't want to explain it. I feel
yep.
better now.
No, hey,
but you know what? That's not altogether bad either. And sometimes parents will engage in conversation with kids, and sometimes kids start asking a whole bunch of questions, and we don't always know how to answer the question. It's okay to say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Now,
It's okay to say it.
Yeah, one of the things that I think surprises many parents is just how much kids actually pick up when they're seeing the TV. And they think the kids aren't really paying attention. They think since it's especially the news is adult directed, they think the kids aren't even interested. That may be true. It doesn't mean they don't get it. And young kids in particular are just highly visual.
They are.
So once they've seen it, you can't get it out.
Right.
There's nothing to take it out of the brain. And there's not, and they don't have, you know, good cognitive skills to be able to explain it to them. So then you're really stuck. You can't just tell them, oh, don't worry, that's far away, or don't worry, that's not real,
right.
because they can't really understand that very well. So it is much better just to limit their exposure initially. And once they have seen it, then kind of all you can do is physical comfort in
physical
many respects.
Comfort and also, you might have to realize they might keep asking you about it. So you might have to revisit the subject mm-hmm. a few times before.
Oh, yeah.
And there are some activities with younger kids that you can do to try and alleviate the fear. I know one activity that we've taken into a couple of classrooms is every time it rains but it doesn't flood, we've had teachers mark on the calendar a smiley face. And then at the end of the month, you go and count the smiley faces. And then they start to get resilient after a couple of months to say, oh, it rained 15 days. but it didn't flood. And so then kids start to get the idea, oh, okay, it rained 15 days, but it didn't flood. So let's go back and count 3 months on the calendar. It didn't flood, but it rained quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so they can start to see that over and over again. And so even in your own homes, you can do that with littler kids, and they can start to see.
Oh. Well, I would if I could count.
Okay. Well, maybe.
That's what you had children for. They
can maybe your kids could do it and count for you.
Do you tend to see kids with worse problems immediately after a major disaster like a tornado, or is it the long term, you know, our house is destroyed or my neighbor's house is destroyed? Is it the fear or the uncertainty afterwards?
I'm starting to see now that a lot of the year anniversaries, especially with the flooding, are coming up. A lot of the kids are now showing more signs of trauma and fear because of the spring rains and the summer rains, and that anniversary is coming up. And so they're definitely starting to show more fear and more trauma due to that. So I would say the long-term effects are definitely stronger on the kids.
Well, what is it you see? What are the things a normal parent would see that they should notice as red flags?
Not so much red flags, but typical reactions can be anything from night terrors to, I heard of one child, he slept with his shoes on because he was evacuated in the middle of the night from his bedroom. And so he's fearful that he's going to do that again. And those are normal reactions. Some abnormal reactions could be that the child just will not sleep at all. So where you need a referral and you need to be referred on to a professional that could help through counseling and things like that. Other things could be, you know, aggressive behavior and just loss of interest in the daily play, you know, activities and things like that, loss of concentration and, you know, just things like that that kids normally want to interact
with. Now, I think some parents that I've talked to talk about seeing earlier behaviors, and so, you know, your child hasn't been bedwetting for years, but now it starts again,
or
so that there's this regression back to earlier types of things.
Yep, exactly.
Behavior regression is definitely one that is a normal reaction to an abnormal circumstance.
All right, you're normal, Mike.
There you go. Clinging, be very clingy to mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, anyone that they can hold tight to because they feel that's a safe place, that's a safe environment.
Although, and they don't want to lose you either.
Right.
They don't want to lose you.
So for children, say, elementary school age, how would you talk to them differently, or what is it they get worried about differently?
Oh, I think they get worried about the same things.
I mean, they're still scared of things that how things look, but mm-hmm. they now start having enough cognitive power to really begin to understand some of the, you know, specific, at least concrete ideas of what it means to have lost a house or what the dangers, you know, loss of life, you know, that those concrete ideas become very scary to them. Does that change the way you should talk to them?
I don't think so. I think you speak to them just in the same manner as you would, you know, be direct and answer the questions with specific answers and, you know, give them opportunities, again, still for structure and normalcy in their life, but also, you know, give them opportunities to talk about what they're fearful about and what their feelings are, you know, what they're feeling. And I noticed a lot of parents have had success in play therapy and helped within the home doing that with their different toys at home and how they've been feeling. And a lot will come out with play therapy.
Now, when you say play therapy, what do you mean? Is this something that the parent needs you know, an occupational therapist or someone to come
Absolutely
into the home?
And,
or what is it that parents would do?
Just how they're interacting with their toys. You can see if a little girl's playing with her dolls and she's hosting a funeral with her dolls. She might be a little nervous that somebody's going to pass away because of this disaster. Or, you know, if a little boy is running his trucks into the water because, you know, and that's not a normal behavior. There might be something there, and you can ask him about it.
Except that I think that is normal depending on the age. Four-year-olds in particular all tend to go through a phase of playing, your mommy's dead and your daddy's dead and you're all alone. Because that's when the idea of death becomes – and it is through that play they get okay with it. So you're talking more about older kids.
Yes. regressing to that type
of playing to make it okay.
Yep, absolutely. And that's when you can start to ask questions about it. You know, honey, what made you want to do this? What made you want to play with, you know, your dolls that way and things like that? So, and that might be, again, a time when a referral to a counselor might be appropriate to see, you know, to delve into that a little bit more.
And even if they are not playing with toys, you know, they're instead what they're doing, they're older and they're just being aggressive. They're just playing out, you know, they're acting up in school, they're fighting with siblings at home, which would not be an abnormal thing, by the way. I know that's not abnormal, but I mean, there comes a time when a parent knows that they've kicked it up a notch and, you know, it's really kind of getting out of hand. That's a sure sign that there's something going on. And I would say one of the things that parents can do to help alleviate that is talk about some more of the positive things that are going on. Talk about, you know, people coming together and working in the community. Maybe even get the child involved in some volunteer activities that are occurring in the community. They can also focus on the cleanup effort that is going on. And even prepare themselves using their own resiliency as a way of empowering one another. So at least the child has, you know, maybe it will happen again, maybe it won't. We don't really know. But I know what to do the next time.
Yeah, this gives
happens.
Them something to do. Yeah, I think right. that's this is not just about kids, but I think adults also,
yeah,
when
right.
they've experienced
exactly.
any type
Everybody
of tragedy,
be, yeah. exactly.
they want something to act on or some way to feel a little more in control of it.
Right.
Yeah.
If my teenager hoarding canned goods,
yes.
that's actually a good thing because she's doing something positive to prepare for the
yes,
future.
She's empowering herself to prepare for future.
I should stop eating all the peas she sets aside.
Yes. No, it's good, though, to empower the kids to help with a family plan for a disaster. So then they feel like they're part, they're giving back to the family.
Doesn't that make them feel more like there's going to be another disaster? Doesn't that scare them more?
It could.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on how you talk about it. So, again, if you go back and you reinforce that feeling of safety, you talk about the fact that we're just going about our everyday life, where you're maintaining a regular routine, and they're getting consistency all the time. And your study talking about the fact that, yes, this terrible thing happened, but we're still going, we're still a family, we're still whole, we're still complete, we're still able to make it. And now, so I think that makes a huge difference.
There's starting to be some research, I don't know that it's been done with disaster recovery or anything like that, mm-hmm. but certainly in couples research, that one of the things that seems to demonstrate the greatest resilience for being able to manage bad times as a couple is demonstrating gratitude regularly.
Yes.
Now, do you know of anything? Is that also, you know, you may have lost everything, but you can still be grateful for what you do have. That you may have even lost family members, but you can be grateful for who is still here, and how you're going to be able to rebuild, or how the community comes together to support each other.
Sure.
Is there research demonstrating that's a really important attitude for parents to help foster in kids? Or have you seen it in your experience, at least?
Well, Abby, you probably can speak to that. You guys had an assembly, actually,
yes.
that really speaks mm-hmm. to that. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely, yeah. It's definitely focusing on the positive. We hosted two assemblies in Colfax and Mingo. We recognized all the kids that volunteered throughout the cleanup efforts. Colfax is a small town that is just east of Des Moines, and it was completely devastated. And so what we did is we went in and we had all the kids that had volunteered. They all had to go when they were volunteering and sign up at the firehouse. And so we had one assembly at the middle school, and the governor actually came and recognized the students, and prizes were donated by local businesses. And then we had one at the high school. And so these kids who volunteered more than, I think some, more than 180 hours
wow.
of, and we saw a video of these football players wading through waist-deep water to go and save someone's home and sandbag and things like that. So we really wanted to give back and focus on their positive efforts. They had a requirement for graduation that they had to have 80 volunteer hours, and I believe it was over 50% of all the students had already met that because of these volunteer efforts. So we went in and we recognized these students, and so we tried to focus on the positive of what these kids had given back, and just the resiliency of this community really shined through, and the amount of gratitude that these kids showed for us just coming in, and whether it was giving them a dozen donuts or, you know, a free car walk. But, you know, these kids were so grateful for this and just for their efforts, but they really focused on the positive. And so I was just amazed at these young students at how resilient they were. And so just focusing on that positive effort really pumped up these kids to then go on in their future and really give back even more. So it was very, very, you know, gratifying for us to give back that way and to recognize these kids.
So do you think the kids are old enough to volunteer for the flood protection efforts and things like that? Is that a good way for them to be proactive in, should we encourage them if they're concerned? Let's go out and help. And
sure. Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. It definitely allows them to feel like they're doing something to, you know, prepare the community and give back and be resilient and create resiliency throughout their community and their family.
And I think if we look at, you know, basic human motivation, there's a theory called self-determination theory that we're motivated by three major things, by a sense of belongingness, by a sense of competence, and by a sense of autonomy. So we want to be in control of things. We want to feel connected to things, and we want to feel that we're good at stuff. And so when a disaster has happened, whether it's a tornado or a flood or Godzilla, then I think, you know, what I'm hearing you say is that by going out and being active in cleanup efforts or in helping other people, maybe you weren't really affected directly, but you can help others who were, that you know, helps you feel like you're connected to your community and connected to other people, and that you're getting a sense of control back again and competence in, in being able to help.
Absolutely.
Now, what if people called, and that number once again is 800-447-1985, what is it you would want to know from them, and what types of services might people request?
We've had all sorts of different types of requests, but what we can do for them is we can, if they call and, for instance, say they live in Jasper or Marion County, they can request that the team from Jasper or Marion County come out. We can come and talk to them at their house, or if they're more comfortable, we can meet them at their church, at their local coffee shop, wherever. And we can give them our big thing is resource referral. We have a list of resources in that community that could be anything from, you know, a mental health referral if they're struggling to get back on their feet, if their home was destroyed, to, you know, a local support group, to skilled labor that might be willing to help them. We've noticed the two groups that we've really noticed that are struggling are families with young children. They just really don't have the time to get back on their feet because this flood or disaster happened more than once. Or elderly that really just need help maybe getting things back together. And so the big thing is the resource referral. We can definitely help connect them. We cannot connect them. We can't do the work for them. We empower them to do the work. And so our big thing is the mental health and the behavioral health. So we really try to educate them on what the normal reactions to disaster and really try to reassure them that, yes, everything that you're feeling is very, very normal, and it was in abnormal circumstances that you had these normal reactions to. So we really are just a listening ear. We're a peer counselor, and so we try to reassure them that everything is very, very normal. But then if we go off and we can help you get some other resources.
Sure. Now, given that people outside of Iowa listen to this program, are there organizations like this in every state? If they call the 800 number, you know, can you refer them to their state's agencies? Or what do we know about other resources in other parts of the country?
Well, what we know is if you are in another state that has experienced a disaster, let's say you are in Joplin, Joplin, Missouri, or you're in Tennessee or you're in Alabama, all of those places have been struck by tornadoes or floods. There are hotlines there that are set up. At this time, I don't know specifically if there is a project like Project Recovery Iowa going, but Project Recovery Iowa is funded by FEMA, so we're a federally based grant. If you don't have that in your state now, you will eventually have a program like we have here in Iowa, and you will have a number that is set up. That number might be set up through the extension, just like here at Iowa State. It could be another entity. It just depends on who they choose to contract out to do the work
now,
with.
If some of that happens, sometime after the event. What if, the next day, before all of these, say the grant is funded and all
sure,
that set
sure.
up, where do people call for the types of help that you're able to give now? Do they call just a local, their hospital? Would they call a local mental health clinic? What is it they should...
Quite understanding your question, within Iowa or outside of
Iowa? Well, I guess with, in general, across the country.
If we're in Woodbury...
Within Iowa, you can call the 1-800 number, the Iowa Concern number. Outside of Iowa, it would really depend. One of the things that I would encourage people to do is to go to the FEMA website,
mm-hmm.
and they would have a list of resources.
That's the Federal Emergency
yes.
Management Agency.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, what I'm hearing is what you're saying is you're from the government, and you're here to help. And this time, it's really true.
It is, yes. We've had multiple people say, you're from the government, and you're here to help.
Wow, your tax dollars at work.
Yes, yes.
That's why it's good to pay them.
Yeah.
And really, that's all we're here to do, is we're just here to help. And I've repeated that many times. We're not at your door to sell anything. We're not here to take your
That's
money.
Our job.
We're just here.
We'll do that, too, if you like.
Okay.
to help and to listen.
We're here to help and we're here to listen. And that's really our job. And we enjoy our job.
Well, thank you for being here. We've been joined by Teresa Zilk of Project Recovery Iowa and also Abby Lamont, Crisis Coordinator for Project Recovery Iowa.
The Science of Parenting is a production of Iowa State University Extension and the Department of Psychology at Iowa State University. To learn more, visit www.scienceofparenting.org.